You're not gonna believe it, Morty. It's the Brawl in the Family podcast, Morty. It's the Brawl in the Family podcast. So just take a seat over there, Morty, and listen to the podcast. Or as they might say in Contra when they sing the song in Contra.
Brawl in the Family
podcast, episode 6, Mario Kart. And safe sequels. Sorry for the belch, guys. Sorry for that belch. Excuse me. Oh, excuse me. Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to a slightly overdue Brawl in the Family podcast.
Just a little bit, not terribly.
Not terribly, not quite as bad as it could be. So, yeah. We're back again in this lovely May afternoon to talk about video games, and specifically this time, the Mario Kart series. Because I think that's it's pretty relevant considering we are on the cusp of a brand new one and the first Mario Kart in the HD era, I guess you'd say, which is, of course, Mario Kart 8. Mm-hmm. So let's go ahead and get started with that then. Alright, so our actual discussion, since Mario Kart 8 is not out yet, we're going to talk about the Mario Kart series kind of as a whole, because I think in each individual one of these games couldn't really bring about a ton of discussion, but I think collectively they're pretty interesting when you kind of weigh each of them against each other.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna bring up each Mario Kart game, you know, in order of appearance, and I'll say like one thing that I like about it, one thing that I dislike about it, because that's kind of one of the consistent things of this series is there's always kind of you know, it's really strong points, and the couple things that I feel could really be done better. So, the Super Mario Kart, Mario Kart specifically is the name of the series, but Super Mario Kart is the Super Nintendo version, and it released 1992 on the SNES, of course, and I think when this came out, it was, what this game did really well was it basically introduced the kart racer. Up till this point, racing games were not, they weren't like this, they weren't cartoony so much, and the use of the items and the use of familiar characters, basically taking Mario and friends and putting them in this, different environment, made for, you know, it was cool because you already had these racers and these established characters that you could kind of care about instead of just these various color palette swaps of cars, which most NES and SNES games, racing games had done before then. And more importantly, it really put the emphasis on kind of arcadey action, items that are kind of silly, and things like that. You know, the levels were kind of designed after, you know, you had donut planes, and you had Chocolate Lake, and Vanilla... Wait, Choco Island was... Vanilla Lake, yeah. All those food things. You know, the food names in Super Mario World, brief aside here, they don't really... If they weren't named that, you would never guess they were based on food, right?
Yeah, not at all.
Like Donut Plains doesn't really have any donuts. It's just kind of called that. Like they want you to go visit, but there's no food there. it's treachery is what it is. It's treachery. And yeah, Mario Kart, I guess there's not really any chocolate in Chocolate Island unless you know, I guess the mud.
What about Choco Mountain? Like there's tons of chocolate there, right?
Well, I guess you could think that it's made out of chocolate because it's brown.
I always thought it was chocolate.
What if it's not chocolate? What if someone thought it was chocolate and tried to eat it and it's just it's just a rock?
Well, they would quickly discover that it's not edible, but it certainly, especially, I mean, jumping ahead to Mario Kart 64, that level just looks made of chocolate to me, so I always thought it was.
Okay. I can see that. We're going to give them benefit of the doubt and assume that Choco Island and Choco Mountain are indeed made of chocolate. But I don't know where the donuts are in Donut Plains. Anyway.
Don't they have those bridges that are like they fall apart when you walk across them, but they're composed of rings?
Those are donut lifts.
Oh.
And I don't know if they taste like donuts or they just look like donuts. I'm not gonna be the one to find out. Couldn't tell you. Yeah. So, Super Mario Kart. I really like this game. This game. And I think people might think I'm crazy for this, but I still feel like this is my favorite battle mode in the series. I remember my brother and I would actually play this battle mode a lot. You're kind of just two guys in this tight arena. kind of zooming around each other, and I don't know, something about it just feels rewarding and balanced to me in terms of the battle mode. But that aside, the racing is actually, I feel, the least item intensive in the series, and possibly the most skill intensive in terms of getting all the cups, because this is the one Mario Kart game where I have not gotten a gold in one of the cups, which is special 150.
Which is hard as heck.
Yeah, yeah, you have Donut Plains 2, which is the beginning part. I mean, Donut Plains 3 or 4, shoot, I don't remember. It's a really hard Donut Plains level, and then it ends with, like, the series' hardest Rainbow Road. But, honestly, I really like that about it. I like how difficult it is. I like how you can't just fall back behind, and the game gives you kind of a pity item. Every now and then, you'll get really lucky and get a lightning bolt. But even that's not gonna, you know, it's not gonna save you the way a Bullet Bill will in the later games. This game is really skill intensive, like it's no joke, and I find that really cool. Like, one of these days I'm gonna, you know, be determined to beat that last cup, because I've given a lot of, you know, I've gone back to it every now and then, and it's still puts up a good fight.
Yeah.
But you know, Sarah has actually beaten that. Sarah's gotten the
gold. Wow. Go Sarah.
Yeah, she's shown me up in Super Mario Kart. Mm-hmm. She grew up on that game too, so I'm kind of proud of her for doing that. But
impressive.
Yeah, Super Mario Kart, it's kind of a classic, you know, but I would say the downside of that is the whole Mode 7 sort of scrolling thing.
Yeah.
You know, it works well enough for what it is, but you're basically racing on flat surfaces.
That's true.
You know, you don't really have that sense of depth that you do in the later Mario Karts.
Well, there's no way around that, though, for the Super Nintendo.
Yeah, there's no way around that. It just, I would say that element of racing game has not really aged as well as, you know, ones from the 64 era and beyond.
You know, I'm not sure about that. I think that what I really liked about Super Mario Kart is kind of the purity of the racing, which kind of goes back to what you're saying about how skill intensive it is, but also, yep, the track design, it doesn't have a lot of gimmicks, it doesn't have a lot of, I don't know, stuff to look at, obviously, but it's just... There's no donuts, that's true. but what it does have is, you know, when they took those courses and they translated them to the more modern games, I think the course design still stands up pretty well.
I completely agree with that.
Those courses remain some of the, you know, most fun games, tracks in, like, Mario Kart Wii, for example.
Yeah, the Ghost Valley. I would pick Ghost Valley and Mario Circuit 3 and Bowser Castle GBA over and over. Those are I definitely agree with that. I think to clarify, I feel that the course designs are really good and they're designed around the kart's abilities really well.
Mm-hmm.
Just the presentation of the Mode 7 sort of 2D gameplay is kind of harder for me to get back into than the polygonal approach to it. Which is not to say that I have trouble getting back into those tracks on, you know, as retro courses.
Right.
Just the 16-bit nature of the racing game itself.
Yeah, I hear you. But, I mean, Mode 7's kind of hard to look at sometimes.
Yeah. but man, that Rainbow Road, in Mario Kart 7, I love seeing that course again.
Yeah.
That was a terrific. I mean, that held up to the test of time, like, super well for me.
Absolutely. I'd say another thing that Super Mario Kart stands out for is its soundtrack.
Personally, definitely.
I think that's probably one of my favorite Mario Kart soundtracks. Overall, I feel some of them are kind of weak. But it's got some memorable tunes, and I mean, I have the menu music going through my, like, start screen.
Yeah. It's good stuff. And then I really like the really funky Rainbow Road music. Koopa Beach was one of my favorites. I think I agree. I think Super Mario Kart's one of the best soundtracks in the series.
Yeah.
For sure.
I'm not sure I'd have a. I don't know about the battle mode though. Personally, I didn't play a lot of it. I really got into the battle mode in Mario Kart 64.
That's what most people got into for sure.
Yeah. So I'm not sure what sort of downside I'd say. I mean, I guess the Mode 7 is just kind of a technological limitation that hasn't aged too well. But that's a really good game.
Yeah, it's pretty refreshing going back to it after the really item-intensive Mario Kart.
Yeah,
pretty cool. So, I mean, it still has items, but there's definitely a smaller use of them. And the computer can't use them. They use, they kind of each have their own little specialized item that they leave on the track.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Toad will leave a mushroom that you can slip on.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool.
It's a little confusing when I think about it, because mushrooms Oh, well. Anyway, yeah, good game. Let's move on to Mario Kart 64, which I would say really brought the series into kind of the super popularity level that it eventually became. And I think, like you said, the battle mode was a big part of that. The multiplayer in general, I think four-player was one of the best innovations of the Nintendo 64.
Absolutely.
And this was one of the first games that really took advantage of it.
Oh, that and GoldenEye.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think this might have been a little bit before GoldenEye, but...
Yeah, I'm not sure which one was first, but I think GoldenEye,
Mario Kart 64, and to a lesser extent, Star Fox 64 were all pretty big four-player games. So I think this one came out in 97 on the 64, or maybe 96.
It was 96 in Japan, but 97 in the
97
US.
In America. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, so Mario Kart 64, this is a pretty popular game for a lot of people that are nostalgic for the 64 era. But, you know, I feel over the years, it hasn't really, I don't know, it's one of the ones that hasn't actually held up as well for me. I will concede that the battle mode is definitely one of the best battle modes for the series.
Yeah.
And I like the battle mode courses. But a lot of the main courses felt really empty to me. They felt kind of wide and not a whole lot going
on. Very
empty. And yeah, I think one of the things that really stands out to me, like as a big disappointment, was this game's Rainbow Road.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of people are really nostalgic about this Rainbow Road because it's kind of got the atmosphere with it. It's got the doo 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 doo, and it's got like the fireworks.
It has that really big skip you can do.
Yeah, it's got that big shortcut, you know. But the whole thing's walled in, and the whole track is something like 4 or 5 minutes long to race.
It's so long.
It's so long, and it's not really anything going on so much.
It's just flat and blah.
Yeah, pretty blah. And I mean that extends to some of the other courses that I'm not really a big fan of. A lot of the retro 64 courses, like they don't feel as good to me. I feel like in Mario Kart Wii, whenever someone picked Sherbet Land or Bowser's Castle, there was like some funky on the Flame Runner that would get super far ahead of the pack, but really mainly on just these courses, these 64 courses. And I'm not really sure what it was about them, but I don't know, they generally just didn't feel all that great to me.
Well, they were designed before funky was a thing.
Yeah. Funky just loves those courses, man.
Personally, though, I liked the Bowser's Castle stage. I didn't mind the Sherbet Land either, but...
Sherbet. It's weird, you know, I like those courses on the 64 well enough. I thought Bowser's Castle was cool because it was kind of the first time you could...
You just don't like it with Funky.
Well, yeah, I didn't like it with Funky. But I thought it was cool because it was the first time you really got to see a 3D Bowser's Castle, because Mario 64 didn't really give us that. So you had like an imprisoned thwomp at one point, you know, it's kind of on the side, and you kind of drive through, you know, this carpeted area, then you go up the spires and jump over the lava. It's pretty cool, you know? That was one of the better courses. I really liked Royal Raceway, mostly because you could go visit the castle.
Oh, yeah. I would spend so much time doing that, just not even racing. Let's go visit the castle!
There's a castle in Mario Kart, in Mario 64, it was really cool. And I thought Wario Stadium was pretty good. Except when people held on to lightning until you did the big jump. It was kind of cheese balls.
Yeah, that was pretty cheesy.
Cheese balls, yeah. But what Mario Kart did really well, Mario Kart 64, was, you know, it had the 3D effect. It had the whole, not effect, I guess. Oh, I can't talk. Mario Kart 64 made the courses more dynamic with the, you know, with the elevation.
The addition of the extra dimension. Yeah,
so while the course designs were, you know, sometimes kind of iffy, I think it set a good precedent to have, you know, you have ramps and jumps and hills and things, and that kind of, you know, that was an important precedent to set for the series.
Yeah.
I don't know why they replaced Koopa with Wario, though. They could have had both of them. I liked Koopa. He was my favorite one. Koopa Troopa. Here's a fun fact for you. Mario Kart 64 was originally going to have Kamek?
Oh, really?
Yeah. You can actually find an old promotional character select screen with him instead of Wario.
I didn't know that.
I thought that was kind of cool. You know, it's, what, 20, almost 20 years later, and we still don't have Kamek. So, I don't know what to think about that.
They should have stuck him in the new one instead of some of those goofy, weird, metallic characters
Pink gold
or whatever.
Peach. Yeah.
Pink gold baby
maybe,
peach.
Maybe they had baby... They could put in baby Kamek, you know? And then you just have to settle for that.
Yeah.
Okay, so Mario Kart 64 is pretty good, but yeah. Some weird tracks things.
I think personally, one of my favorite things was the battle mode in that game. Like I said, I didn't get too much into the battle mode in Super Mario Kart, but I just had so many long nights with my friends, including you, playing Mario Kart battle mode on Mario Kart 64.
Yeah, Black Fort's one of the most popular, might be the most popular battle course there is.
I think the 3D nature of the game, as you know, kind of primitive as it was in some ways, it still worked really well for the, like that course in particular. It's just cool to have the higher levels and lower levels, and
that worked nicely. Even if the characters themselves are sprites.
Yeah, very true. I think the overall course design, I agree, wasn't very good. The courses today just feel empty and kind of not interesting. But overall, I mean, it was certainly a standout game at the time.
Yeah, and I thought the soundtrack was actually still pretty good.
Yeah.
Kind of jazzy, you know.
Yeah, I think
there's a lot of jazz piano, boom, 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 boom. A lot of that going on.
I agree.
Sort of funky. All right, so then we have Super Circuit, kind of the forgotten Mario Kart at this point. For the Game Boy Advance, it was almost a launch title. I think it released that August, 2001, and this one I don't think it added any new characters. But one of the standout things about Super Circuit was that instead of having four cups, it had five, so 20 tracks total. And you could unlock every course from Super Mario Kart as like a bonus course if you got enough coins within the each of the regular Grand Prix. So you actually had access to 40 tracks total, which is eight more than your every Mario Kart that followed it, really. Mm-hmm. And that was something I thought was really cool about the game. So Super Circuit has not, I have it on the Ambassador program for the DS. It was one of the games.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, I'm not sure why, but it doesn't feel like it's aged as well as Super Mario Kart. And I can't quite put my finger on why. I think part of it might have to do with the Mode 7. But I think the game visually looks a little bit nicer than Super Mario Kart, and especially in terms of its use of Mode 7. So I'm not exactly sure what it is. But it's interesting because it, unlike every other Mario Kart that followed, this one feels kind of more like a follow-up to Super Mario Kart and that style of driving. But you do have Mario Kart 64's style of items, which you know includes the dreaded blue shell and the triple shells. So there's more of an emphasis on items than in Super Mario Kart. Did you ever play Super Circuit?
I don't think so. No. I like the retro courses that they put in the later games are pretty good. Like particularly the Bowser's Castle 3 and Mario Kart Wii. I really enjoyed that stage. But no, I actually never played that one.
I gotta complain about something for the retro courses. And Mario Kart Super Circuit. Super Circuit has some pretty creative levels. I think on the DS one, used Sky Island, which is like a beanstalk cloud sort of cool thing.
Yeah, that's good.
But there's several others. There's like a Wild West one that has a really cool song there called Sunset Wilds. There's a Cheese Land, and there's something called Ribbon Land, which is like a bunch of presents and ribbons and stuff. Ribbon Road, I think. Mm-hmm. And we've never gotten any of these. They always seem to put in either a Mario Circuit, which is they had like three or four Mario Circuits, and they had like three or four Bowser's Castles. And these courses are, I mean, they're designed well enough to race on them, but I kind of wish they put something that feels more distinctively Super Circuit rather than something that was already basically in Super Mario Kart.
Yeah. So they had those stages that kind of. It's a unique theme, like unique tile set that isn't really in any other Mario Kart. So,
there's a level where you race on cheese. You know, we haven't seen anything like that in a modern Mario Kart. But they kept putting in kind of the most standard style of tracks.
I wonder why that is.
I thought it was kind of weird. Yeah. So, not a whole lot to say about Super Circuit, really. It had a little bit of single kart multiplayer, which was kind of cool. But for the most part. I think this was really a single-player game for me, and as far as single-player goes, it works pretty well. It's the first game to actually have rankings for how well you do in a cup, which I thought was a good addition to the series.
Yeah.
And it's also the first game to have the retro tracks. But that said, it's kind of hard to go back to today.
A little bit.
Okay, let's move on to our favorite 7.9 out of 10 game. Mario Kart Double Dash 2003. And the GameCube's big holiday 2003 title.
Yeah.
Now, Chris, what do you remember about Double Dash upon release?
I remember playing the demo in GameStop, and the first thing I thought, this was Mario Circuit, and the first thought I had was, oh my god, this music is terrible. I couldn't get over it.
All that whistling.
Yeah, I was just shocked by how much I disliked the music. I guess, to be fair, not all the, that even that song, I've heard it so many times now that it doesn't really offend me anymore, but I think Double Dash is probably where the music in the series just really started to go off track to somewhere that I'm really not a fan of.
No, that makes sense. I can't really recall too many songs from Double Dash at this point.
A lot of them are kind of generic and forgettable, but they're also just kind of lame to listen to. It's just, I don't know. They don't even serve their purpose that well of just, you know, providing some kind of theme to the track.
Yeah, something to kind of pump you up a little bit.
Yeah.
Double Dash's music is kind of stinky. I will make a case for I liked its Rainbow Road, and I liked its credits theme as far as the music goes. But I think that might have been just about it, because the rest I'm having trouble thinking of any of the music beyond the main theme that was not so good. but there's a couple things I liked about Double Dash, kind of a lot actually. In fact, from the Mario Kart circles, I've kind of poked around a little bit. Double Dash is actually might be the most popular of the series
really?
So far.
I'm surprised to hear that.
You're surprised to hear that?
Well, I am.
I'm gonna say this about Double Dash. I think its courses actually were designed a lot better than Mario Kart 64.
Yeah.
I think that really stood out to me.
I think its
graphics are probably still better than Mario Kart Wii's, to be honest.
Really?
I think Mario Kart Wii's, we haven't gotten to Mario Kart Wii yet, but I think Double Dash looked really good. Mm-hmm. It was the first polygonal Mario Kart game, you know, in terms of polygonal characters.
Yep.
And I thought everyone looked really good. I liked the double kart mechanic well enough, but I was not crazy about the controls, which felt a little bit unresponsive. They didn't really feel as tight.
Yeah.
Much
floatier, and I don't know.
I think it might have been because you're piloting these bigger, clunkier vehicles.
Yeah.
In general. But I like the course design. I like the All Cups mode. And apparently land play was really cool if you could get 8 players together. Or 16, actually. But if you get all those GameCubes together, apparently that was cool, but I was never able to get into that situation. Also, the battle mode was kind of weird. Like, I don't know. Something didn't quite
add
up.
Yeah, the courses weren't that good, and I think it was just the double cart, two people to a cart mechanic. I think it was innovative, which was kind of cool, but I don't think it really provided that much in terms of like better gameplay.
Yeah, maybe not. I did actually like the I like the unique items each character had.
Yeah, that was cool.
I feel like right now the roster in Mario Kart is really kind of on the, I don't know, in the background of people's minds. Well, maybe not everyone. Some people are really upset about, like, no Dry Bones or Diddy, but for me, I don't know. I can't bring myself to care about the roster that much, but I think for Double Dash, I was pretty interested in who was going to be in it, because I they felt like they had more personality when they each had their own individual item, you know,
yeah,
their own
I
ability.
Agree with that.
Instead of just a different skin that's pretty much identical to this other skin in the same weight class.
Yeah, so they still have, you know, their unique stats, like, so some are a little heavier than others or something, but
yeah,
I definitely agree that something unique about Double Dash was the ability to have those items.
It also added the multiple carts, which became a constant thing in each edition after that.
Yeah, which was a good addition as well.
Mm-hmm. So it had some good additions. At this point, the single player was starting to feel a little long in the tooth for me.
Mm-hmm.
Going through the Grand Prix, you know?
Yeah.
And I think this one didn't have any retro tracks, so it felt a little short to me, too, if I'm remembering right. Because you just, you know, you had the four cups. But then they had the all-cup mode, which I thought was really cool, where it would start you off with the first course, and then it would mix up the rest of the 16. And then you'd end with Rainbow Road, you know.
Yeah, that was cool.
That was a cool thing. I like the whole marathon thing. Mm-hmm. So I thought Double Dash was pretty good. It's hard for me to rank the Mario Kart series because they're all kind of on the same level for me.
Yeah.
Except for this next one, Mario Kart DS, which I actually might rank ahead of all the others.
You know, I might agree. That was probably the first one that I had a lot of fun just with the racing mechanics on their own. Mm-hmm. I thought it just... The way that the power sliding worked in that game was really fun. It gave you kind of the flexibility to do it in a lot of places that you might not otherwise do it, which kind of led to the whole snaking thing, which, you know, I think it kind of hurt the online gameplay because you'd have some people who were just, you know, doing it so much and so to a level that just kind of makes it not fun. So it's kind of a double-edged sword for me because on one hand, I think it actually made it a lot of fun because you could kind of experiment with that
the power sliding mechanic to kind of squeeze them out of certain areas.
Yeah, which I thought was really cool, but then again, it kind of led to being exploited pretty badly.
Yeah. Mario Kart DS, you're right, the racing mechanics were tweaked a little bit, and I think it was just a little bit too much flexibility to the point where people could do it on straightaways and still gain speed.
Yeah.
And that was... That's like the Achilles heel for this game for me. It's like the one thing that's like, I wish that wasn't there. It's not a huge deal anymore since there's other ways to play Mario Kart online, and you're really going to only encounter it online. And, well, we can't play that one online anymore, can we?
No, we can't.
He's gone.
It's gone.
Yeah. Fortunately, what Mario Kart DS did really well was kind of add a ton of stuff besides just multiplayer stuff. It had the retro tracks, which is... it's kind of the first time we had retro tracks in their modern incarnation, where they're from a widespread of Mario Kart games.
Right.
But what else it did was it had these mission modes, which I thought were really cool. Like an actual one-player mode where you would try to do these challenges, like collect these coins in this amount of time, or do one lap in reverse, or fight this boss with your cart. And they never brought that back! And I'm ticked off about it. Why would they do that? Look, I said, I think earlier we thought we'd agree there was no why did they do that, but that's a why did they do that right there. Why are they doing that with Mario Kart? No,
you're totally right. Like, what we've discussed in the past, like, that Mario Kart is always needed is something more to the single player experience, and that's a perfect example of something they could put in that would really extend the single player lifetime of the game. I have no idea why they haven't brought that back.
I like the mission mode, and I like what Diddy Kong Racing did.
Yeah.
And with Mario Kart 8 coming out, and it's like the same old thing, you have 50, 100, 150, and stupid mirror mode, which is stupid, and I'm sick of it. I'm sick of mirror mode.
Yeah.
I hate mirror mode. I don't want to do mirror mode anymore. Mirror mode is dumb. It's like a dumb time fillery way to just extend the life of the game that's just annoying. And it's stupid, and I wish we could just race in courses on reverse. You put a few ramps in there, you go in reverse, and it'd be really cool. But it's dumb mirror mode. It's like, oh, you thought it was a right turn, but now it's a left turn. It's like, oh, that's so interesting. I'm so glad I'm playing through the whole game again. Yeah. Mirror mode's stupid! I hate mirror... Ah!
So
I get all worked up.
Can you tell us how you really feel? But yeah, I hear you. I think it would be really cool to do backwards courses. That would be much more interesting.
Throw some ramps in there, go reverse.
You know, it'd require a little bit of tweaking, obviously, like you put the ramps in and whatever to make it work, but I think that'd be way more interesting than mirror mode.
Between its super, like, awesome courses, like original courses, and the introduction of the retro courses, and the mission mode, Mario Kart DS was the first and maybe only Mario Kart game since the original, for me, which felt like they really put their all into it. They said, we're gonna make this the best Mario Kart yet. And we're going to put everything into it, and, you know, we're going to balance things, we're going to have these extra carts from Double Dash, we're going to have the retro courses from Super Circuit, we're going to give it its own thing here with the missions, and we're going to add online for the first time ever. And it was awesome, except for the snaking. Snaking was terrible. But everything else was awesome. We even had more characters for once. Like, they didn't just stick to the... Oh, wait, that already happened, Double Dash. Well, we still have more characters, and we had Rob, and... It was just a really good game. We had the TikTok clock and the airship fortress.
Yeah, those were good.
Oh, that was really good. Mm-hmm. What a great game. I just wish they took that mentality to any of the future Mario Karts, because I feel like they... I mean, they're focusing in some way on what's important, which is the course design, but I feel like there could be so much more than that. Which brings us to...
Mario Kart Wii.
Now, Mario Kart Wii, I have definitely put the most time into, I think, out of all the games in the series.
Me too.
And that is because its online is terrific.
Was
terrific. Very sad. May it rest in peace, Mario Kart Wii. Mm-hmm. Your excellent online really showed up Brawl. I would love for the new Smash to have online as good as Mario Kart Wii. For all the things that Smash does better than Mario Kart in terms of effort, Mario Kart still got the upper edge in the online area.
Yeah, if I can take a quick technical aside, I think it's because the way that it handles lag is just very different. Like, just because of the game design, you know, you look at mm-hmm. Brawl, and it's really important for each player to see where every character is at this, like, to be exactly on the same frame, essentially. But in Mario Kart, they can kind of fudge it a little bit. Like, you know, you'll see the enemy racers kind of warp around a little bit, and so it just kind of gives you an approximation.
Every now and then, you'll hit someone. You know, it'll look like you hit. Excuse me. It'll look like you hit them directly with a shell, and nothing will happen. Or vice versa, it'll look like you missed him by a lot, and it was like, boom, you know, you'll hit him anyway.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, that doesn't really matter so much in Mario Kart, but that would matter a lot in Smash
Bros.
Yeah,
and it doesn't happen that much.
Yeah, that'd be it would horrible.
So, yeah, two different types of games. I hope they figure that out.
Yeah, me too.
But anyway, yeah, Mario Kart Wii's online was terrific. It was handled pretty much perfectly. I'm not really sure if I'd change anything besides maybe the way the VR is handled a little bit. Like, you can get decimated if you get unlucky. Online, you can lose hundreds of VR points that, you know, would take getting first several times in a row. But, you know, not a huge deal, ultimately. That's really where the game was kind of at its best. Which makes me a little sad, you know, because you can never really experience Mario Kart Wii in that way anymore.
It's really too bad. I think it wasn't really their intent to shut them down, but since those games ran on the GameSpy servers, and GameSpy shutting down their services, it's just too much trouble for them to, you know, continue supporting them and translate them over to some other host, I guess. But I think they probably would have continued them on for a while, because they're still supporting the Wii. And that's been one of the most popular Wii games, so, you know, if it was up to Nintendo... Mm-hmm. If it didn't require, like, some extraordinary measures, I expect they would have continued it.
Yeah.
It's too bad.
So, outside of the online, what did you think of the...
It was probably my favorite one. I might even put it above DS, mainly because it didn't have the snaking issue, and I really liked the course design, and I liked the feel of the racing a lot. I think the motorcycles added a lot to it as well. I ended up usually using bikes because, you know, they're a little bit faster, but I think I really liked the way the racing mechanics felt. It didn't have quite the same freedom of power sliding as the DS version did, but it's still really well-designed courses. The music's okay. I really like the difference, the varieties and the selections of racers and carts and everything. You really get to test out a lot of different, you know, settings to find the one that fits you the best. And then there's always the funky in there, which is kind of annoying. But that was mainly an online issue. Like in terms of,
I think the more popular your game gets online, the more likely it is that these balancing issues are kind of come to the front. Yeah. For all we know, you know, all the other Mario Karts would have been really unbalanced as well. You never really know until you kind of get a big group of people and you start finding that everyone's starting to pick Flame Runner or Funky. You know? It's like, okay, they had to rebalance the bikes in 8 because of that.
Oh, they did?
Because the bikes were a little bit, did you ever see the Nintendo Direct for Mario Kart?
Oh, yeah, and it said that on some courses the bikes are a little faster, and on some the cart's a little faster.
Yeah, I don't think they have wheelies anymore, because the bikes were actually generally, you know, a little bit better in Mario Kart Wii. But what disappointed me about Mario Kart Wii is that I think it doesn't actually look as good as Double Dash. I think the characters are sort of lower poly, and there's kind of a weird bloom effect that I never really...
Yeah.
Fully enjoyed it. It doesn't. I don't know, something about the colors and the doesn't quite look as vibrant and smooth as Double Dash did to me, but I mean, that might just be, I don't know, it might be my memory or something.
No, I think they, like with the Wii, they obviously didn't have a lot of extra power to work with, and that was just probably some specific effect that the Wii was capable of doing that they figured if they threw it in, it'd make it look a little better, you know, to compensate for the, I don't know, for it not being a big step up at all from Double Dash.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the 12-player thing made them use, you know, not the greatest models or something.
Yeah.
Like, if you look at Donkey Kong, Donkey Kong looks pretty bad.
Yeah, he does, doesn't he?
Poor DK got kind of the short end of the stick.
But
on that
mentioning the 12-player thing, I actually really like that, especially for online. Like, that was just, it just made the races a lot more exciting to have that many more players. And
yeah, I'm gonna agree there. That's true.
Yeah. I not to get off track, but in Mario Kart 8, do they have 12 players or is it 8?
Oh, they got 12.
Oh, good. Well, that's exciting.
Despite the name, they have 12. Yeah, 7 they didn't, but 8, yeah, they're bringing it back to 12. Just I'm guessing, you know, it can handle it without a problem.
Yeah.
And you're right. I do like the fuller amount of characters. I think that's a good addition, and it made it really fun when you're in a big old room, you know.
Yeah.
With just people everywhere.
And I liked how you could play online with two people on the same Wii. So you could have a friend over, and you'd both be playing online at the same time, which is really fun.
Yeah, definitely took advantage of that a ton.
It kind of hit the frame rate a little bit, but it was still playable.
Right? Yeah, it was definitely playable, for sure. So yeah, Mario Kart Wii, the online, I'll agree, was excellent. And yeah, I like the track design a lot as well. I don't know why they brought back Yoshi Falls. That is terrible.
That's the worst stage.
Most of the other ones were really good. I was disappointed with the one-player mode. Yeah. I think at this point, this is kind of the point where Mario Kart it became clear to me that they didn't really care much about one-player at this point.
Yeah.
Because it was once again the GP and, you know, 50, 100, 150 in the stupid mirror. And they did have a cool thing for a while called Mario Kart Channel,
mm-hmm.
where you could actually do some of those missions that were in, like, the DS one. Like, they actually had some boss battles and stuff.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was pretty neat, but I mean, it was cool that it was there, but I kind of wish they had just
put it in the game.
Put in the game itself, yeah, or at least, you know, you could unlock it online and then it would permanently be in the game.
Yeah.
Cuz you can't do any of that right now. I mean, you could fight like Wiggler or something, like this giant Wiggler. I don't remember the exact boss battles, but they had a couple of them. So, that was kind of cool. So yeah, Mario Kart Wii 2008. And that brings us to the most recent game that came out, Mario Kart 7 in 2011 for the 3DS.
Now that's one I haven't played much of. I played it at a friend's house, and being the Mario Kart pro that I am, I played against them head to head, and I beat them so badly that I didn't want to play anymore.
Whoa!
Yeah, it was like kicking a puppy.
Is that the extent of your Mario Kart 7 experience?
Yep.
7's pretty solid. For some reason, it doesn't have Waluigi, which disturbed a lot of people. They were very disturbed about the lack of Waluigi. But otherwise, it does go back to 8 players, which kind of feels like a step back at first. You kind of get used to it. I will say this about 7. I think it has the best set of courses in the series. Like, I think the original tracks are on par with DS, which is my favorite, you know, as we've established.
Yeah.
And the retro tracks... I definitely think the set of retro tracks is the best set of retro tracks.
Wow.
that they've had so far. I really enjoy the tracks in the game, which is, you know, a really important part. And they don't have bikes, but I think the gliding mechanic, works pretty well. The underwater one is just kind of there, you know. It doesn't really
affect anything, right?
Not really. I mean, the gravity's slightly different, but it doesn't really. It doesn't really feel like much of a change. But the parasailing stuff is actually pretty cool, and, you know, a nice minor upgrade. Otherwise, I was disappointed again with the single player, blah, 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 blah. So, I mean, really, Mario Kart 7, it's pretty good representative of the series in that it moves forward in some ways, and it's kind of stagnant in others, and it's, you know, it's another Mario Kart game. I mean, not too much I can say about it. So, and I'm kind of feeling like 8's going to be sort of similar. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be really fun, but, and it's going to have good tracks. Like, the tracks look actually really, really excellent. But I don't, from what I'm hearing, I don't think it's going to be like the Smash Brothers Melee of Mario Kart exactly. Mm. I'm still kind of waiting for someone to Sakurai it up a little bit, you know, and really kind of go all out with like everything.
You know, I wonder, but, what if they put Sakurai in charge of Mario Kart?
I'd be game for that. I'd be, as long as he can make the online work, you know. But I think that would be pretty cool. I think there's other series I'd rather him be in charge of.
Well, sure, sure.
But yeah. So that brings us to Mario Kart 8, and I'm pretty excited for it. You know, I'm especially excited for the online. At this point, I've kind of decided, you know, one player is not really going to be good in Mario Kart anytime soon. Mm-hmm. I do plan on playing through the game in 150 just from the beginning. Just because it's like, all right, I don't want to do the boring 50cc or anything. I'll just jump straight to 150. I'm pretty good at this series. I think, you know, it'd be nice having a challenge right from the beginning on these tracks that I've never raced on before.
Yeah.
So I'll do that, and I'll play a ton of online. It'll be good. It'll be good.
What if it requires you to play on 50cc in order to unlock everything?
Oh, I checked. It does not.
Oh, good, good.
Yeah, I don't think they've done that. Actually, they may have never done that, except you unlock 150 in Super Mario Kart, I think. But yeah, I mean, I'd rather a 200cc at this point than mirror mode. I'd rather just a super fast, difficult mode than stupid flipping it. I hate when it picks mirror mode online.
Ugh.
It's like, it doesn't pick your course. It doesn't pick your course at all. But when it finally does, it's mirrored. Yeah.
I wish there was the way to disable that.
That's run its course. You know? It's been around since Mario Kart 64, and it's like, okay, it's kind of cute here. And then just keep bringing it back.
Yeah, and the worst part is, in Mario Kart Wii, it could only select mirror mode if the person whose map it selects had unlocked mirror mode. So, like, it's almost better to be playing with people who haven't, you know, gotten that far in the game.
Yeah, so you don't have to deal with it.
Yeah, so, I don't know, maybe Mario Kart 8, they changed that. I would hope so.
That'd be nice. You know, speaking of that, I hear a couple kind of worrying things about Mario Kart 8's online. Namely in the track picking, like you're not actually able to pick a course. You have to pick from a set of three pre-selected courses that are kind of picked at random. I think they did this to prevent, wait, what?
That's kind of strange.
Yeah, it's a little weird. I think they did this to prevent people from picking a course over and over like they did with Maka Woohoo, which was glitchy in Mario Kart 7, and people would glitch to the front and then keep picking it. But I think an easy way around that would be to just disable the last course picked, you know?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Pick from anything else. But yeah, so I hope that doesn't really affect the online too much. I don't think it will. I think it'll give you us a good variety of courses to pick from. I mean, to race on.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I feel like we'll be racing on a variety of courses because people can't pick their favorites over and over, but it still doesn't seem like the best way to handle it.
No, I think it's good to give you the option to, you know, race on the course you want to.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, I'm still looking forward to that, and I'm super psyched for the free game. I'm going to get Wind Waker HD, and me and Sarah are going to play it. She's never played it.
That is quite an awesome game to experience for the first time.
Yeah, she's only played Link to the Past through, you know, throughout. Yeah. So I'm really excited to have her try out a 3D Zelda game. And what a 3D Zelda game!
It certainly is a 3D Zelda game.
Yep. Alright, so...
it's one of the better ones.
So, all in all, Mario Kart is a series involving Mario in a go-kart.
Yeah. That sums it up.
That sums it up. It's pretty good. It's always pretty good. Kind of great. Sort of weird music. Good online. Kind of coasting single player. But there you have it. It got super popular with the Wii one, didn't it? Like, that sold so many copies.
It sold by far the most copies of any Mario Kart game. It's many, many millions.
Many, many millions. Well, Chris, do you think Mario Kart 8 will be the game to save the Wii? A lot of people have been... oh, okay. A lot of people have been whispering about, you know, what game will save the Wii U?
I don't think anything can at this point.
Hey. You know, something can. Something can. why you gotta say that?
No, I think the Wii U's success is gonna be based on a more consistent trend of changes and good titles. It's not really gonna be a specific title that'll turn tide, I don't think.
You could have that one game. I think Wii Sports was really the if you could pinpoint the Wii success to anything, it'd be Wii Sports. And don't forget Halo for the Xbox. Well, I think the Xbox would have been sunk without Halo.
Well, but both of those things were launch titles, and they were kind of tied in with the appeal of the console itself. Like, look at Wii Sports. It wasn't that Wii Sports was awesome. It's that everyone wanted to use the Wiimotes to, you know, swing them around in, you know, virtual reality or something. So it was that marketing appeal that sold so many Wiis. It wasn't specifically that Wii Sports was a killer app. Wii Sports just kind of was a good, like, tech demo, really, for the Wii hardware. And I think the problem the Wii U has is that the gamepad is not as sexy of a device.
Maybe so.
I mean, I like it. I think far too few games have made good use of it, but I think it can be done in interesting ways. But it's not the kind of thing that people are going to say, oh, that's something I want. That's something I can immediately, picture having fun with.
Yeah, it requires a little bit of an explanation. Yeah. You know, you can't just say swing it like a sword, you know? I mean, that's immediately accessible. So, I mean, that's true. It's a different sort of thing.
So, and at this stage in the game, I mean, I don't know, you know, if you have a great Zelda game come out, that might sell some more consoles to Nintendo fans, but
yeah, I think one game can make a huge difference, but I'm not feeling that it's going to be a game in an established series.
No.
I think it's going to be something... It would have to be something completely new. Like, the people would be like, oh, I really need this, you know?
I think it would have to go beyond just being something new. It has to be something more than just a new franchise or a new game. It's got to be something that could shake up the market in the way that the Wii did. But the problem is, I don't know how you can do that without introducing a new add-on or, some sort of attachment or something, because... everyone's got the Wii U with the gamepad, and I don't know, maybe you could come up with something really clever that uses the gamepad in such a way that can tap into the public's, you know, demand for, I don't know, something. You know, right now people want VR, or people want, the ability to smell your game, I don't know, something. But
something pretty out there.
But I think it's going to be really hard for them to make that happen. Which is too bad, because I think the Wii U is a really good console, but...
Yeah, I've been enjoying Game & Wario. Full disclosure, listeners, Chris has sent me Game & Wario for my birthday.
Yep, happy birthday, Matthew.
Thanks, man. I've been enjoying it. I love gamepad heavy games. Like, I like games that use, like, you can unlock these toys in it with the chicken.
Yeah,
you know?
That's
like
great.
The little egg comes out of his butt. Did you see the thing that's like you whisper into the queen's ear?
I'm not sure if
it's like it's like this little stick. You play as this little stick figure on the queen's shoulder, and on the gamepad is her ear. And you hold down the you press down the gamepad, and the ear gets really big. And you say the line at the top that's like, "Aren't I beautiful, my peasants?" And then she says it on the screen in this really weird, like, you know, it puts your voice through a filter.
It's a distorted voice, yeah.
"Aren't I beautiful, my peasants?" And then all the people either cheer, or they go boo, and you can just do this as long as you want.
Oh yeah, like, no, we did get that. And there's like so many of these things too.
Yeah, it's like it's just these really weird little ideas. Like, I picture the development team just being like, "Wouldn't it be cool if you could just do this?" And it's like, okay, let's put it in, whatever. And it's a bunch of really strange things. But I gotta say, the gamer game is hilarious and like one of the best ideas I've ever seen with a gamepad. So, listeners who haven't played Game & Wario, for the gamer mini game, you play as Ninevolt, who's the Nintendo fanboy kind of WarioWare character. And his game is involves him playing on a sort of handheld Game Boy Advance type device past his bedtime. So he's lying in bed, you know, he's playing the game, his face is kind of lit up by the glow of the thing. And he's not supposed to be up, you know, it's bedtime, he's supposed to be in bed. So it's kind of a relatable scenario for anyone that's a gamer. So the idea behind this is you're on the gamepad, it's displaying the game he's playing, which is this sort of WarioWare style collection of micro games where you have to get to the boss, you know, defeat him and stuff. And the trick though is that on the TV screen, his mom is kind of creeping around the house.
You can't get caught by your mom playing your game. So at the last moment, you have to put the gamepad down and go to sleep.
Yeah.
Or at least act like you're sleeping when the mother peeks in.
When the mom comes in, you have to press the two shoulder buttons, and what this will do is it'll make Ninevolt duck under his covers super fast, and his mom will look in, you know, and she won't see anything that's suspicious, so she'll leave. But it does such a good job with this concept because it plays it up like this horror film kind of thing. Like, it gets really suspenseful because they have like these psycho strings going, you know, and you're like, oh, what's going on? And sometimes the door will open, it'll be your cat, you know, it'll be something that's not the mom. And so it's like, oh, okay, whoo. And, you know, you keep playing the game, and it's tricky because you're trying to play the game itself, and you're also trying to keep an eye on the main screen. And right. The mom does these ridiculous things. Like, she comes out of the TV at one point, and they have, like, a few levels. There's, like, the later levels, she starts doing, like, I remember she actually breaks the window. Yeah. And she looks in, and it's like, it's horrifying. And the most, well, I don't want to spoil all of them, but there's, they, you know, she's got, like, these glowing eyes, and she's, like, this shadowy figure. Mm-hmm. So it's, like, it's kind of suspenseful, and it's really entertaining. It's a really good use of the gamepad.
Yeah, I think overall, Game & Wario does one of the best jobs that I've seen of any game that makes good use of the gamepad, and is just really creative, and has a really good variety of different games to play.
Yeah, I've unlocked almost all of them, but yeah, I've already gone back to several of them to try some of the later levels and stuff. So
yeah,
it's really cool. I think it didn't really get that good reviews, but you know, I'm really digging it.
I think
it's got good multiplayer too.
Yeah, I think the only my only complaint is that there's not more games.
Hmm.
Like if they'd had, you know, maybe 4 more multiplayer games and a few more single player games, then I think that it would be perfect.
Yeah, do they just have the 4 multiplayer games then?
Yeah, unfortunately so.
Yeah, I feel like the amount of single-player content is actually pretty good, because you have kind of several levels, and you have kind of, you know, you have a decent amount of single-player. It would have been nice to see one or two more, you know, at least a couple more multiplayer games.
Yeah.
Now, design is multiplayer. Is there any other single-player game that's kind of like that, where you can do it with two-player?
Honestly, like, probably like half the single-player games, you can kind of pass around the controller, and it's still kind of fun party games. Like,
okay.
I don't know if you unlocked the archery one.
I think that's the last one I unlocked. I haven't actually played it, but I played it at E3. Like, I noticed a couple of these had shown up at E3 that they put into Game & Wario, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. So you can kind of play them in a party atmosphere, so you're not just relegated to the strictly multiplayer games, but...
Yeah. Well, that's cool. I'll have to keep that in mind next time I have a few people over.
Yeah.
Game & Wario.
We're pretty deep into the podcast now, folks, but before we continue, let's take a little music break. Featuring the strange tunes of Mario Kart.
So, that was a little bit of a side talk about the gamepad, but let's take a little break from this game talk and talk about Brawl in the Family.
Mm-hmm.
We're a little bit behind on comic discussion. I think the last one we actually did was 507. It's been a little while since then. I'm not exactly sure if I want to go back way super far or just kind of take a look at you know, a few more recent sort of notable comics. So I decided to do the second thing, and we're gonna look at Divide by Hero, which is a story arc starting at 545, and 550, which is Plumber's best friend. So let me just talk about these. 545. Okay, so Divide by Hero is a story arc that I kind of wanted to do for a little while, but I hadn't really written an ending exactly, and I just thought it was kind of a fun concept. You have Ganondorf and you have Bowser, and they're, you know, they've always kind of been the losers of Nintendo. You know, I mean, they're pretty cool characters, but they never win. So it kind of made sense to me that maybe they...
I'm going to stop you there for 1 second. Ganondorf is not a loser.
Well, he's not a loser. By a loser, I mean literally one who loses ultimately.
Well,
not a.
No, but every villain loses ultimately. I mean,
yeah.
Look at Ocarina of Time. Ganondorf had a good bit of success for a little while.
That's true. He did. He did have roughly 7 years of success. Yeah. So my apologies to the GB. Because he's done a little bit better than Bowser.
I think so. All
right, but regardless, they've both been actually spoiler alert for those who haven't beaten the most recent Zelda, Link Between Worlds, or the most recent Mario. Yeah, just skip ahead like 30 seconds. For this comic, I actually wanted to have their injuries reflect their most recent defeats. So Ganon actually. You send a light arrow kind of into his back at the end of Link Between Worlds, which I thought was kind of cool. And Bowser falls off a tower, which he pretty much says as much. So those are I didn't just pull those out of nowhere. Those are actually from the most recent two games. So anyway, these two characters, I figure they're, you know, they kind of have a lot in common. They both have these consistent nemeses, and that are always giving them trouble. And I thought, you know, I bet they could take on each other's rival without too much of a problem. It was a little bit more of a stretch for Bowser, because I don't know, Link's pretty strong, and Bowser's not like especially powerful, I think, as far as characters go. But I mean, Ganon could easily take on Mario. So for Bowser, I kind of made it sort of thing where, like, you know, Ganondorf's body is probably softer than Bowser's. I think Bowser, in games like Bowser's Inside Story and stuff, he's pretty buff. I mean, he could punch things. He could take a lot of damage.
On that note, Ganondorf usually wears, like, armor and stuff, doesn't he? I mean, look at Twilight Princess. He's got, you know, lots of body armor going on, and he's obviously got the magic, too. And but Bowser, though, in some recent games, he's got magic. He does stuff that, you know, could only be through magic powers, like in Galaxy 2?
Yeah, well, usually Bowser's magic, I think, comes from him taking something, like taking stars or taking
a
star rod, or
that's a good point, actually.
True. But yeah, I guess Ganondorf is usually a little bit more armored, but regardless, he's still human. He's still human. He's still weak to light arrows.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that's true.
I think light arrows are something that
is uniquely powerful against him. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, he could pretty much be invincible, but Link has like his only weaknesses.
Yeah,
you know, which is Master Sword and light arrows. Right. So I'm thinking these two guys can make a deal, and, you know, we'll see what happens. So, essentially what happens is they take on Mario. Ganon just kind of outsmarts him in a really obvious way that, you know, that Bowser could do if he was a little bit smarter. I think Ganon would be the brains of this outfit, personally. And then,
Definitely.
And Bowser, uses his fire against Link, and he was kind of a few readers pointed out, you know, this is kind of a cheat, and I might agree there, where Link sort of pulls out his sword and Bowser just roasts him entirely.
Yeah.
Link could probably put up a better fight than that.
Yeah.
That's kind of why I added that, not much of a jumper, huh? Like, kind of late in this comic's production, to sort of drive home the idea that what I was trying to portray is that Link is not as agile as Mario. So he wouldn't be able to really react as well as Mario would against Bowser. I don't know. Shut up. Yeah. So anyway, the climax, of course, comes to the top of the castle, top of Bowser's castle, and they're switching them off.
Yeah.
And I really like this ending that happens here, because I think it's really in character for both these guys, to the point where they each have each other's rivals, and they're like, all right, nothing has to stop me. And they both realize that, you know, there can only be one. So, of course, they turn against each other. And in a moment of weakness / stupidity, they unleash each other's weaknesses in hopes of, you know, defeating the other one without realizing, obviously, you know, they get to defeat themselves. So that's pretty much how it ends, which is, you know, too bad, because they could have succeeded if they weren't so dumb. they could have really done something here.
They could have. Personally, I like in part 4, the last panel, I think Bowser looks a lot like Homer Simpson. So, I like that.
He's got that big muzzle. Yeah. It does kind of. It's pretty good. My Bowser, like, he looks different in every panel.
Yeah.
I can never get... I don't know. I just can't wrap my head around the shape of his mouth. I don't know, something about
it's,
that is...
No, it's really weird. I actually had to draw Bowser for my art class this semester, and his nose has this really weird lump in the middle that doesn't... I don't know, the way that I assumed his muzzle was shaped appears to be completely wrong. It's very weird. It's just, it's a lot of these, like, spheres that are just kind of mashed together.
And yeah, I think I remember seeing him in Super Mario RPG's art.
Oh, yeah.
That art used a lot of that kind of spheres-like sort of approach.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think ever since then, he has had this sort of weird lump on his nose that I'm not really sure how to approach that. I usually kind of simplify it a little bit.
Yeah.
To a Homer muzzle.
No, I think you did a good job of it. It's weird to usually look at, but I don't think the variation between different ones is a problem, really.
It's too much. Okay, yeah, that's nice. That's just one character that I think is one of my more my less consistently on model characters for sure. So yeah, I think you know, I kind of always like the idea of the villains teaming up kind of thing, and I guess this might be as close as Brawl in the Family gets to it for now. And I don't know, maybe in the future I might try some giant thing where, like, I don't know, they all work together or something. But this kind of made sense to me, just having these two switch. So that was Divide by Hero, and that brings us to Plumber's Best Friend. About my dog, Tara.
It's very sweet.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, so I was, like, long story short, I was, like, super sad for about a month. But everyone was really cool, you know? I mean, I feel bad because I got a lot of emails from a bunch of people that's like, oh, don't worry, she's in a better place, kind of, you know, just being nice and stuff. And I was able to respond to all of them for a while, but eventually it kind of too many. Now I feel bad because a bunch of people were being nice and I might respond. The emails. So if I didn't respond to your email, I'm sorry, but I appreciate your email for sure, because I like my dog. And more specifically about this comic, this I thought this was just kind of an element of the comic I haven't really done before, which is one of I guess, you know, losing a friend, and I haven't really focused so much on Yoshi, I guess, as a character. So it kind of made sense to me to have him as sort of these doggy kind of traits, and, you know, the jokes that would kind of go with that, you know, Mario having to feed him and stuff, and he leaves an egg, you know, on the carpet, and just things like that I thought were just fun to do, and I kind of hope that no one would have too much of a mood whiplash when he falls down the pit. But I just thought the whole pit thing was a good way to kind of show that sort of devoted nature of our pets, you know, while still tying it directly into, you know, established Mario lore, which is, of course, the whole Mario jumps off Yoshi, you get an extra jump kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, honestly, before we lost Tara, I had no idea what I was going to do for 550. But I guess that's how these things work out.
Unfortunately so.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, people were really receptive to it, which made me happy. I actually thought it was going to be very divisive. I was kind of expecting a little bit of a reaction like the Tim Buckley Control-Alt-Delete Lost comic, which has become sort of a running gag in webcomic circles. I didn't really want to have a loss involving, you know, Brawl in the Family. But actually, yeah. I mean, if you look at the comics on... if you look at the comments on the section... sorry. If you look at the comments on the video section, I mean, everybody's talking about feels and stuff, so I guess I did something right.
Yeah, no, I would not compare that to Mr. Buckley's in any way. I mean, come on. I think you're usually very careful and sensitive when approaching issues of loss or anything that can be related to the real world in terms of any serious matter. I think the reason that famous comic got made fun of was because it didn't do that.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Its approach was very bad.
Well, yeah, I mean, and at the same time, I didn't want to be, like, too maudlin, you know?
Yeah.
Or too, you know, too saccharine, but, yeah. Well, it was tricky, you know? You have to balance approaching it with, you know, some humor, not being too dark with it, but also the right amount of gravitas, I guess, to where, you know, to where people can... don't feel like I'm making too much fun or anything.
Right.
And you also have to keep things in perspective. It's a Nintendo webcomic, you know. If you do something like this, it has to be really well tied into the characters. So, I mean, the whole jumping off Yoshi thing I thought was what helped,
yeah, you know, yeah.
Was what helped make it feel like it wasn't too much of a stretch, you know?
Right, right.
Kind of linked it back to that whole Mario world, so. But yeah, that's basically the story behind Plumber's Best Friend. Oh. That was fun, I guess. It wasn't really fun. It was cathartic, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I mean, kind of related to that, there was, I think you did a very nice tribute to Terra as well, in the middle of the Divide by Hero series.
Oh yeah, that probably shouldn't be in the archive still, but yeah, I had to update with something. That was a pretty rough week. I didn't just say, I can take a week off now. I mean, it was really something where I could not stay focused on working on anything. But yeah, I thought it was a good way to kind of honor Terra's memory. So, and I'm glad that people have, I'm glad I have this medium to be able to share with others kind of the effect that this pet has had. It's kind of it's kind of nice that other people know about her a little bit at least. Yeah.
I think a lot of people can relate. I mean, a lot of people have lost pets or loved ones, and that's certainly something everyone goes through at some point.
It sucks.
Yeah, it does.
Yep. All right, so that's comic talk for right now. Let's move on to one last section. I actually, we had talked, and we had some idea for why did they do that, but we forgot it. So I guess we're going to be more mellow today, with the exception of me freaking out about mirror mode et al. And, single player in Mario Kart, but
I think this section kind of relates to the Mario Kart section.
It does. You're right. This is a digital deconstruction where we sort of talk in a little bit more depth about various gameplay elements. And today it is related to Mario Kart in the sense of sequels and kind of how we decided there's, you know, if you break it down, there's really two ways to do a sequel. You could make kind of a safe sequel where you build upon the foundation of a previous game by adding, new levels, new ways to do the mechanics, maybe a new kind of storyline with the same kind of characters. But essentially, it's still the same type of game, same genre, of course, and it plays very similarly. And on the other hand, you have the more outlandish sequels that kind of maybe discard some things from an old game and add in completely new elements that might change the core gameplay at a core level, or change the story or the feel of a game. And I guess we'll start with Chris. What would you say are kind of the benefits of each of these versus the risks involved?
Well, I think a safe sequel can be a good thing if it's the sort of game where you're not really expecting a completely new experience every time. I think Animal mm-hmm. Crossing is probably a good example of this. Animal mm-hmm. Crossing...
Oh, and real quick, when we say safe sequels, it's really just kind of the best term I can come up with. It's not really necessarily a phrase of condemnation. It's really saying a sequel that is fairly similar to its previous game.
I think games that aren't really heavily based on, say, story or characters... would benefit most from that sort of approach because, I mean, from a development perspective, you're kind of making a product, like, you have all these ideas for, say, Animal Crossing, you make the first one, mm-hmm. and you're like, well, how can we make it better? So, in each sequel, you kind of have the opportunity to make things better, add new things, just overall take the same experience that people know and make it better. So, fans will keep playing it, but people who haven't played the series before... can just try the new one, and they're really getting the best that the series has to offer with just playing that single game.
Right.
You know, I think I'm fine with that for a certain series.
I think Phoenix Wright is actually a good example of a series that does that.
Yeah, and that's interesting, because that is more of a story-based game, but, it gameplay-wise, it stays fairly consistent. They mix it up each time a little bit with the investigations and, like, the Cyclops and stuff. But but that's done in a pretty good way. They gradually add new mechanics, but you're kind of getting the same game each time, and you know that you're going back for the story and to solve the new mysteries.
Right.
And
Mega Man, I think would apply as well.
Yeah, but I mean, I think there's kind of a differentiation here. Like in terms of Mega Man or Phoenix Wright, if you like one, you're probably going to play the others too, because they don't really replace mm-hmm. each other.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
But when you have games like, say, Mario Kart or Animal Crossing or like The Sims or like sports games,
Call of Duty,
yeah, Battlefield. You know, these games that kind of they're intended to just simply replace the previous game.
Yeah, you're right. There is a difference between Phoenix Wright and even like Mega Man, which would at first glance seem like one of these, but you're right. I mean, everyone has their own preferences with those. I think those series you just mentioned do sort of replace the previous ones.
Absolutely, and I think it's kind of tricky because sometimes I think that's kind of a good thing because from the perspective of they're just taking this single concept for a game and they're just making it better and they're trying to add new stuff to it, and you know you can always know that if we're willing to play this sort of game, you know, this isn't really a gamble or it's going to be pretty good. But it also can result in stagnation of not only a franchise but a genre. Like I think Call of Duty, for example, has kind of just really stuck the shooter genre in this really unappealing place, at least to me. I mean, for the last several years, really, like these really popular games have, you know, really dominated the market, and they don't really change much from each other. But the changes they do make, I think just make the genre less and less interesting. So
yeah, no, that I think I agree.
So I don't think. I mean, thinking of other good shooters in the past, like GoldenEye or Perfect Dark, you know, for the genre to be where it is now is really disappointing to me.
That's an opinion I really kind of hold pretty strongly, but I find less and less people agree with that.
Well, those people are...
I really like that stealth gameplay of those older shooters.
Yeah, those shooters were so deep and had so many options and just had a lot of replayability and were very well designed, and I really couldn't say the same about the modern Call of Duty games. I think the one that, like, Call of Duty 4, the first Modern Warfare game, was pretty good. But it's really gone downhill since then, and I think most people would probably agree with that. And if you disagree with that, sorry, but I disagree with you.
So. Yeah, there you go. You put that very diplomatically. You know, yeah. I don't think anyone's gonna have a problem.
Nah.
That all makes sense. I think Tony Hawk would also apply to that. Possibly some music games like Rock Band.
Yeah.
Guitar Hero, depending on, I guess, your preference for the soundtracks.
Adjust it a little bit. Those are kind of strange games for example because they had different soundtracks in each Guitar Hero game, for example. So I always didn't like that. Like, I would have preferred to just buy one Guitar Hero and then continually get new songs, you know? That would have made more sense to me. So I think that's one of the reasons they shot themselves in the foot. Like, you know, there was the recession that happened, and they're really expensive games that you have to keep buying all these new plastic instruments.
new plastic instruments. Yeah, that's true. I think Mario Kart applies there. It's cool on one hand because you get kind of a refined experience eventually. You get games that... They've kind of gone through the ringer. They've come out, you know, fans get feedback, critics get feedback. You release a technically better version. Same thing happens. The downside, like you said, is that they kind of replace these old games. So if you have these old games, you're not really going to play much of them anymore. Yeah. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, are we going to be playing much Mario Kart Wii from this point? Since it's offline and you pretty much just have... You know, tracks. You might as well play Mario Kart 8. You know, if you have it.
Yeah, that just kind of results with games that will just kind of fade into obscurity, and you know, people will remember them. They'll have them in their closet somewhere, but you know, no one's going to go back and play them really. You're not going to get games like Super Metroid that everyone just you go back and play because it's a great game. These games are just there's no reason to play them because there's better ones and newer ones and.
Kind of replaced them, yeah.
So, I mean, the flip side of that is sequels that really take a risk and, try to do something new. That runs the risk of people not liking them, though. Especially when you have an established franchise, that's risky.
I mean, it's hard to get, you know, a nice fan base that really likes what you did and then suddenly flip it on them.
Yeah, look at Wind Waker.
I think Wind Waker is an interesting example because because the gameplay wasn't that different, but you know, I think it actually is fairly different enough.
Yeah.
Given the focus on sailing, given the new art style, it makes the game really feel different.
Yep.
even something like Majora's Mask could apply. Yeah. Even though, I mean, it looks very similar to Ocarina of Time, and the gameplay is not quite as different as it is in Wind Waker in terms of how you move about and solve things. But they have the extra focus on the whole time-based thing, and that makes it stand out as well.
Yeah,
you're right. I think for WoW, Zelda, the Zelda series in general actually is pretty good about that. I think Final Fantasy actually does that a lot, but to less consistent results.
I'm not sure I'd agree with that. You say Final Fantasy takes risks? Is that what you're saying?
I think Final Fantasy 9, 10, 11, 12, and 13 are all pretty different in terms of what you like the way you play the games.
Yeah, that's true.
Their battle systems are different. I think they kind of fall into similar JRPG like tropes.
Yeah.
Characters. But at the same time, I think messing with like changing the battle system and world and cast from game to game is, you know, pretty significant.
Yeah.
I think people can really dislike 10 and really like 9.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think people can really dislike, let's say, Black Ops 3 and really like Black Ops 2, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point.
But that said, I don't think Final Fantasy does it particularly successfully.
I mean, to be fair, the series has actually been pretty innovative in changing a lot of things from installment to installment ever since, I don't know, 4?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, 4 introduced a lot of pretty unique story elements for the time, and... Mm-hmm. Then 5 mixed it up with the job system, and then from 6 on, like, each game really is...
It kind of feels... It, from 6 on, it feels like you could really title each game something, like,
yeah.
Outside of the Final Fantasy.
Yeah.
They don't really feel like the same series, in a way.
But they have those nice little touches that do connect them, and...
Yeah. I mean, those are good, you know?
Yeah.
But ultimately, I still think you could get away with... I mean, name them all. I mean, you could even argue that Chrono Trigger could be a Final Fantasy game,
yeah.
With a couple modifications, for instance.
That's a good point.
So we also have. I think these are kind of common in the NES days. If you think about Mario 2, there was Mario 2,
yeah.
But there's also Mario 2 for us, and Zelda 2, and Castlevania 2, which are all kind of the weird trio of twos there.
Well, they tried a lot of new things, but they didn't. I mean, specifically for Castlevania and Zelda, I mean, not a lot of the new things were really that good.
Yeah, they didn't really stick. I mean, I think Zelda 2 has its fan base.
Yeah.
But I think most people would regard it as one of the weaker Zeldas. I would myself. But I do like some things that it does, and it's different enough to where I still play it every few years, you know? Not every few, maybe like every 5 or 6 years I'll run through Zelda 2, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that's something. That's probably more often than I'll play through Double Dash.
Yeah.
So, it's kind of cool when sequels do that, but yeah, like you said, it's pretty risky. Is there one or two sequels that really stand out to you as really like kind of being a paradigm shift that were super successful while doing it?
Yeah. Well, you've got Metroid Prime, you know, Ocarina of Time, Mario 64. Yeah.
You're right. Those are all really good examples.
You know, those games were just, not only were they fantastic, but they had to really redesign, you know, how the games are played, how those franchises are played. So, I think in those cases, probably the fan bases were really excited to begin with about, you know, the transition into 3D and, the new things they'll experience. But, look at Mario, like, I know a complaint that you used to have, I'm not sure you do anymore, was that it wasn't very Mario. Like, you know, it has all these things that aren't really, they don't feel like the previous Mario games. It's missing, you know, the fire flowers and, you know, things that are familiar.
Yeah.
But...
I still kind of feel that way. It's a little bit weird in terms of character, I guess. It's not a huge deal, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's still one of my favorite Mario games, for sure.
Yeah.
But I think Galaxy might have actually crept ahead of it for me.
Well, Galaxy's great.
Galaxy, and I think Galaxy would actually apply as well. It's not as, like, completely... genre defining as Mario 64 was, but I think it did a lot of really cool things with platformers. You know, it's slightly controversial because some people still prefer the more open world approach with Mario that Sunshine did, 64 did.
Yeah, but I mean, Sunshine has its share of weaknesses, but that was kind of a risky sequel too. It definitely, yeah, at least from a theme perspective, and from, you know, adding Flood on there, it was a gamble. Mm-hmm. Which part of me always appreciates when a company will do something that'll shake it up, just, you know, to try to be innovative and try to change things. And like I loved what Zelda did with Majora's Mask and Wind Waker, but I still feel that after Wind Waker, like the reception that Wind Waker got initially, really just scared the pants off Nintendo, and ever since then they've been way too safe with these Zelda games, and I would love to see them go back to doing something that'll really excite us. But
yeah, I'm pretty eager to see actually what they have in store for E3. Yeah. I have a pretty strong feeling that Zelda's going to show up.
I would hope so.
And not just Hyrule Warriors, but like, you know,
a real
The Legend of Zelda, a real Zelda. Yeah, the new Hyrule Warriors screens look all right.
Yeah.
The main thing I'm a little concerned about is the gameplay at this point. I'm not sure if... I mean, Dynasty Warriors is just kind of okay, right? It's just kind of alright.
Yeah, the series... I mean,
hey,
they're made
are each
okay.
of those like a sequel? Are they like sequels that replace each other?
those are very safe sequels to one another, yes.
Yeah, they're very safe sequels, okay.
Yeah, you play the new one, you've played them all.
Yeah. Now, would Smash Brothers qualify as a safe sequel? Kind of...
Huh.
It's like it's sort of like that, except but like taken to an extreme. Because like if you look at Melee compared to 64, there was like so much stuff added.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like Sakurai, and then Brawl to Melee. I mean, it wasn't quite as much stuff added, but it was still a ton of stuff. And even then, you have people that prefer Melee, like Crazy Chris here.
Yeah, just like me.
Like Chris, yeah. And so I kind of feel that might happen again with the new one. You know, it'll come out, it'll have a good amount of stuff added. But you'll have people that prefer Brawl, you have people that prefer Melee, you have people that prefer the Nintendo 64 original. But,
do people prefer the original?
Think... Wait, what?
Do people actually prefer the original?
Some of them do, yeah. It's a pretty good game, you know.
Oh, it is a good game,
Not as deep, but I play it every now and then. I think Smash Brothers actually might fall into the whole Phoenix Wright, classic Mega Man kind of thing, where each sequel adds stuff, but... Each game still, you could still get a different enjoyment and level of experience out of each.
Yeah.
Different experience and level of enjoyment out of each one of them.
I would agree with that. I think in general, I would prefer that games don't take the super safe route to simply try to replace their predecessors. Even in the case of, you know, say Call of Duty, for example, I think there's still the potential to, you know, make the game more interesting, have better maps, have, you know, I don't know, things that will change the balance in some way or change the gameplay that, you know, sets it apart a bit from the previous games. And I think it's really a shortcoming of the franchise that it doesn't do that. Not just to pick on Call of Duty, I mean, other series too, like Mario Kart, you know, changes a little bit from here, game to game, but I'm not going to go play the old ones anymore.
For the most part. I think the best case scenario is either something that renovates,
innovates?
innovates? Best case scenario, I think, is something that either completely innovates the series and breathes new life into it, or something that plays it safe but does not exactly replace the old one.
Yeah.
You know, that's still, you could, it doesn't, it's not just... You know, bigger and better and completely. Like, I feel Galaxy 2 is a pretty safe sequel if you consider what the first Galaxy did, but I still like going back and playing the first Galaxy. I mean, I think some people disagree. I think it's a little open to interpretation. Some people might think no reason to go back to Galaxy 1 after Galaxy
2. I don't know about that. I think those games, for single player games like that, when you have like a whole set of
different
worlds, different levels, like, you know, even if the gameplay is similar, you still got a whole another set of levels. So, I think
that's true.
That kind of makes it. Each game have some sort of longevity to it.
That's kind of why Mega Man can kind of survive as well. You have the similar mechanics, but it's, you know, new set of levels, and the emphasis is on a lot of it is on the levels themselves,
right?
And the music and stuff. So
when you have games that are less about the levels, like Animal Crossing, Call of Duty, I mean Mario Kart's about the levels, I guess, but you know you still have the retro stages, and you know
you'd have retro stages. That's right.
Yeah. So I think.
Okay, well, I think we figured it out.
Yeah, I think we have.
So you know, Phoenix Wright, they did a non-safe sequel, a very out-there sequel, and it was called Miles Edgeworth Investigations.
That game was terrible.
But it took risks.
Not really. It was all about, like, fan service and,
Whoa.
Yeah. Whoa. Are you kidding? That game was full of fanservice.
I don't remember any shirtless Edgeworth or anything.
No, it was like, it was written by, like, whoever wrote that game was a fangirl of Miles Edgeworth because they self-inserted themselves into Kay Faraday's shoes. And,
oh man, you've been hanging around those girls too much. You've been hanging around those girls.
I've
talking about Kate Faraday and Mary Sue. Man, all these crazy things. I don't know what to make of that.
The story and characters are not very good. I've watched a good portion of the game. I haven't played it, but I've watched.
That's your problem right there. You haven't actually. I don't really like it that much. I'm not gonna defend it.
Well, okay. So that game was not really made by the same team though. I would more point to like Apollo Justice, which was a little bit of more of a departure because it really shook up at least the characters a bit. The gameplay was pretty similar. But,
did you know they're making a new one?
Like a new one?
A new one.
Oh, that's cool. I haven't played the fifth one yet, but I probably will.
Yeah, the fifth one's good. No, but this new one is actually takes place during 19th century Japan with Phoenix's ancestor.
Oh yeah, wait, I saw the thing for that. Yeah, that looked pretty cool.
Oh, okay, you saw the thing for that.
Who knows, might be cool.
That'd be cool. Alright, so that's enough about sequels. I'm sick of talking about them.
Me too.
And I'm tired of talking about Mario Kart, and I'm really tired of Mirror Mode.
Me too.
So, but I am looking forward to Mario Kart 8, and I'm looking forward to Wind Waker, and I'm looking forward to E3! So our next one, we should meet again at this same location. Me at my house, you at yours.
Okay.
And we can discuss whatever the heck Nintendo has thrilled us or disappointed us with at E3 2014.
That sounds great, Matthew.
I'll give you some hands-on impression about Smash Brothers. I'm excited.
Okay.
They just revealed Ike today. What do you think of that?
I think I'm confused as to why they're including some characters that, at least in previous installments, I would have expected them to be replaced by a new character. So I would expect that, like, Crom instead of Ike. But if they're going to include both of them, that's a lot of blue-haired, swordy people, like you said. But
blue hair, man.
Yeah. But I don't know. I mean, I like Ike, but
yeah,
I would have preferred Crom.
He was actually one of your favorite guys, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah. So, I'm not complaining about him, but
I think characters with original movesets might be safe.
Yeah.
I at this point, I would actually not be surprised to see Rob come back. Huh.
Rob's great. I love Rob.
He is a robot.
Yep.
Yeah, so Smash Brothers should be pretty good. I just hope with all these veterans showing up, we don't get like kind of a small amount of newcomers. Because, they're really the most exciting thing about Smash Brothers. Let's be honest.
Yep.
Some newcomers. I mean, that makes me excited. But yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to all of the E3 shenanigans. So, we should definitely have another podcast shortly after E3. And I could just talk about it the whole time. You could ask me questions.
I will.
Fun. All right. Well, thanks for joining us once again, listeners. And thank you for joining me, Chris. And thanks again for Game & Wario, which I think I'll go play right now.
I hope you enjoy it, and I enjoyed the podcast. Yeah, thanks everyone for listening. This has been Chris.
Yep, and Matthew, talking about Mario Kart this time, and E3 next time. So, we'll catch you around next time around, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.